Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda 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 Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda 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 Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda 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 Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda 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 Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shilakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayati Agirim Yakripa Tamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinitarino Vancha Kalpaturibhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So, continuing or just starting, whichever the case may be, of our Monday night Vaishnavacharya series, we did begin last week, of course, with Narottam Das Thakur, and continued on in the evening. And tonight we're going to also speak about Narottam Das Thakur. The importance of talking about our Vaishnavacharyas is actually something very essential to our deepening our mood of Krishna consciousness, our understanding of Krishna consciousness. We can theoretically and academically read the books of the Acharyas, Srila Prabhupada's presentation through his writings, and gain some understanding. But to really embrace these details to our heart, it does require a certain type of identification. Wow, Bhakta Henry, hi, Vaughn. It does require a certain type of identification with the lives of those who are practicing this. The Vaishnavacharyas, they have given their life as both an example for us in Krishna consciousness and as a inspiration for us in Krishna consciousness. We see not only the immediate associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but the second, even third, and fourth generations of his followers. Current day Vaishnavas, we very enthusiastically study their lives because their lives give us the gold standard, as the phrase is, of how to execute our devotional service. This execution of devotional service based on a practical example deepens our own appreciation of Krishna consciousness. It gives a certain real edge to it. You know, it's very nice in that way. Yeah, I got it started, Jiva. Thank you. So as we've mentioned before, Narottam Das Thakur was our first inspiration in this path towards understanding the Vaishnavacharyas. And of course, the life of Narottam is very full for us as ISKCON devotees, as Gaudiya followers, because most of the, a good portion of the songs that we regularly sing, and particularly the songs that were very dear to Srila Prabhupada, the poems and glorifications of the Lord that we use are by Narottam Das Thakur. So he's not one of those individuals in our Vaishnava line that are kind of like distant somewhere and okay, they play a role. I'm not really sure how they connect, but anyway, okay, we'll study about them. Narottam Das Thakur is a very real inspiration. And for many of us, he's like a bit of a hero. You know, one of the first Sankirtan devotees spreading the mission, carrying on, even though he had no direct contact with Lord Chaitanya. I mean, of course, he was blessed by the prema of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya appeared to him in numerous dreams, but I mean as far as personal association. So, you know, in this way, it is an important thing for us to incorporate into our devotional practices to study the lives of the Acharyas. So the last time we spoke, Narottam had arrived in Vrindavan. I wanted to skip ahead a bit, not so much in a timeline presentation, but more of a topic presentation on Narottam's life, to the arrangements and preparations for the Gaur Purnima festival in Kettari. Now, Narottam, as I mentioned, he didn't have the direct association of Lord Chaitanya, so he was the disciple of Lokanath, but he was the Shikshik disciple of Jiva Goswami, who's one of the personal associates of the Lord, of course. So he's not so close, just a little bit removed. And in this way, very very strong desire to, you know, be connected to Lord Chaitanya. This was Narottam's very life. So he, and not, at that time in history, there wasn't a Gaur Purnima festival as we know it. It hadn't been established yet. Narottam's arrangements for that were one of the first to engage in this particular festival. So Narottam had returned home to Kettari after leaving Vrindavan under the instruction of Jiva Goswami. Of course, we know that he and Srinivas and Shamananda traveled. Srinivas would stop in West Bengal and continue the preaching there in his home area. Narottam would go to East Bengal, what we now know these days as Bangladesh, and then Shamananda would continue on to Orissa, where he was from. Well, their first stop in West Bengal, of course, we all know the story, which we'll tell some other time, about the books being stolen. And this was a big major disturbance. Narottam and Shamananda being a bit junior, they became very distraught and thought, well, this is it. We blew it. We'll just take our lives right here. We'll just go drown in the Ganga. Srinivas, as we've mentioned, was some 20 years older than them and a bit more mature. He's like, wait. You've all understood the instructions of Jiva Goswami, of the other Goswamis we studied under in Vrindavan. So you just take those to your heart and continue on to your respective places. This is my area. He was more or less the GBC of West Bengal. This is my territory. The books have been stolen. I'll stay here and locate them and keep you informed. So after some, you know, encouragement and discussion like this, they decided to go on. So this was the mood that Narottam and Shamananda entered into the village of Kettari with. There's a nice picture of Narottam and Shamananda on the banks of the Padmavati River looking over to the village of Kettari and the boatmen taking them across, and Shamananda asking, Narottam asking, so how are the king and queen? This would be his mother and father. And the boatman, you know, mentions, oh, how, you know, they're quite elderly now and they've turned the kingdom over to their nephew, Santosh. Of course, their son, Narottam, should have taken it, but he's gone away to become a mendicant in Vrindavan somewhere. Nobody's heard from him in the longest time. And so Santosh has taken over the kingdom and he's ruling very nicely. But the king and queen, they're practically a shadow of themselves. They simply looking out the doors of the palace and the windows of the palace each day, waiting when will Narottam come. And, you know, so going on like this, and you know, speaking in this way. And the boatman kind of says out loud, he says, you know, who could be such a thoughtless child to cause such distress to his parents like this? And Narottam says, that would be me. I'm Narottam. And the boatman is just ecstatic. Naru has returned home. The minute the boat hits the dock, he breaks loose and runs into the village. Narottam's here. So it's a big grand reception. Mother and father come, and, you know, everything is very nice, and they want to arrange for him to have a room in the palace and all. And Narottam restrains. He says, no, I'll stay in a hut outside. And mother begins to protest, but Krishnananda Dutt, he's a sadhu now. He's not our son anymore. He's a sadhu. He wants to stay outside, so we let him. So he arranges for a nice little thatched hut like that. So Shamananda stays with them for quite some time. And they do kirtan and preaching and, you know, share the message of Mahaprabhu and the teachings of the Goswamis. And in due course of time, of course, Shamananda has to return to Orissa and take his leave. Well, this is like super painful for Narottam. You know, first of all, they've left Srinivas. Now, for years, the three of them haven't been separated. Well, anyway, Shamananda continues on to Orissa, and that's also a whole other story. And Narottam is left there in Khetri to continue his preaching. Now, at a certain point in history, Srinivas Acharya and he meet up again. And at this point, they both have their disciples and followers. And Srinivas has one disciple whose name is Ramchandra Kaviraj. Ramchandra Kaviraj is the most excellent of personalities. He's a jewel. And he's the favorite disciple of Srinivas. He's his foremost disciple. And he and Narottam just hit it right off. I mean, it was just like, boom! They just linked right up and shared everything. It became, you know, very close and did kirtan together and katha together and read and studied together and all. And Srinivas noticed this, you know, and he was very pleased by this. More to the point, Srinivas's wife Ishwari, also a disciple of and also initiated by my brain's just frozen. At any rate, she notices too. And so she took her husband aside and made it clear, you should give Ramchandra to travel with Narottam and stay with him. So this is how Ramchandra came to be with Narottam. And Narottam and Ramchandra spent the balance of their lives inseparable, very, very close. So Ramchandra returned to Khetri with him. And while they were in Khetri, Narottam receives a letter from Vrindavan. And in that letter, Lokanath has, sent him some instructions. Of course, the letters were a bit more of a thing back then. You didn't, like, get mail every day. I mean, every day I go to the mailbox at home and I open it. Will there actually be a letter or something of substance? Or is it just going to be more junk and advertisement and solicitations and bills? So, you know, you were enthusiastic to get a letter, you know, And so it describes that he tore open the container of the letter, of course. And here again, we're not talking about newspaper. I mean, paper in an envelope. This was, you know, these were all done on palm leaf with a nice wrapping and all. And so he tore it up as if he was eating a sumptuous feast, because he knew these were instructions from his spiritual master, Lokanath. So Lokanath, in this letter to him, describes that it is very important that he engage the people in worshiping the deity. And to this end, he encourages Narottam to establish a very grand temple in Khetri. So this is the instruction of Lokanath to him. So Lokanath was very, very happy to get this instruction, to receive this instruction from Lokanath Goswami. And so he, he had seen different indications that this would come about. His cousin Santosh had already begun the process of carving some deities. They were not quite finished yet. And he had seen devotees worshipping deities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his different travels, and he thought this would be very nice to do. And so a desire had grown in his own heart to also do like this. So when he discussed this with Santosh, Santosh was very enthusiastic about it. He, as I say, he'd already begun the process of arranging for some deities, not knowing exactly how things would come about. And now here's this instruction from Lokanath. And so, you know, this would be a grand event, and they would invite devotees far and wide. And so, you know, in this way, they decide to also make it a festival in honor of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because coming up right away is the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so what better way to observe this than inaugurate the annual festival observing Gaur Purnima and install these wonderful deities and open this big temple, you know. So in this way, the preparations were made. It's really amazing how everybody was invited. Narottam arranged personal invitations for each devotee, and the invitation would examine the particular devotee and their particular qualities, and then some poetic presentation of that devotee's nature in the form of an invitation was written. So every invitation was personalized in that manner. And they were all just done in the most elaborate, beautiful writing. And, you know, it wasn't just like, you know, they printed off, okay, let's print off 5,000, just drop them in the mail. I mean, it was all very, very personalized like this. So the devotees were invited from far and wide. I mean, everywhere. Janava Mata received the invitation, and she was very, very satisfied to begin immediately making arrangements. And speaking of arrangements, Santosh had his hands full. Narottam may have no doubt been organizing the festival itself. But the details, the infrastructure, as we would call it, was left to Santosh. So it was arranged that, you know, okay, these prominent devotees are coming, and they'll stay in this house, and so-and-so will stay with that devotee, and they've got a guest room there. But very quickly, those types of rooms are filled up. I mean, Khetri was, you know, a very wonderful place, but it was a somewhat small place. So, you know, Santosh had to build facilities. Santosh didn't just, I just throw some thatched huts, you know, just over there by the river. No, everything was very, very nice. Very, very first-class arrangements with separate kitchens for each person, separate bathing facilities. Each home was appointed a cook and a servant to take care of who was staying in that home. Well, I mean, it was just, everything was very, very elaborate. And so, you know, the... At the same time this is going on, Narottam has been developing his kirtan style. Narottam, of the three individuals, Srinivas, Shamananda, and Narottam, Shamananda was a writer. Srinivas was the pujari amongst them, and Narottam was the kirtanir. Narottam was famous for this. And Narottam began to collect a group of devotees from the area, different abilities that they had, and engaged them in kirtan, engaged them in just amazing kirtans. They would go on deep into the night with, you know, just incredible focus and love for the holy name in their chanting. And Narottam would also develop new styles. He was the band of the day, you know. Narottam and his boys of Khetri, they were the guys to hear, you know. If they were playing, you wanted to get a seat for that. So in this way, Narottam developed this particular style of kirtan that was not known at the time. Certain type of beat on the drum, certain type of beat with the kartals, certain tunes and the way it was all played. And so this was all developing very much and firing up this mood of Sankirtan, of the spreading of the chanting of the holy name like this. So all of this was coming together at the same time as the big festival was being planned. So Narottam contacted Srinivas, and you know, they had everything set in place. The construction of the temple was well underway. Of course, this, you know, as we all know, building a temple doesn't happen overnight, so it took a bit of time. It's not exactly in any of the Shastra is given the exact time frame for this all to develop, but you know, it happened rather quickly. And he asked Nartama Srinivas that he should come before him, come with him and help to organize everything and to be in charge of all the installation and the Pujari side of things and caring for the deities like this. So in this way, everything went on. There's a nice description here that as the guests started to arrive, Narottam and Srinivas fell at the feet of each individual devotee, welcoming into the village, setting aside, okay, this will be, the so-and-so will take you to your quarters and stay with you, and there'd be a cook already there, you know, making meals for them. And, you know, it says that upon seeing how nice all of the reception was, the villagers were just, their hearts were just melted. Many of these villagers in the town of Khetri were not actually Vaishnavas in the early days of Narottama's life and during the rule of Krishnananda Dutt. But by Narottama residing there and by seeing just the beautiful qualities and the gentle nature of Narottama, and then having that culminated in seeing how he and Srinivas received all these guests for this festival, they all became devotees, the entire village. You know, so accommodations, as I mentioned, were all made for each of the devotees. And while they were in Khetri for the festival, it mentions that all of their personal miseries and difficulties were completely forgotten because everything was done so first class to look after them. And all the houses were decorated, not only the residential houses of the people there, but the guest houses for the individuals coming. And, so in this way, preparations were made. Santosh erected for the opening night of the kirtan, just like in Mayapur now. You know, they're preparing for Gaur Purnima and they get this kirtan mela that happens before it. And it's not like, okay, well, let's just, you know, sit down over here and we have some kirtan, which is also nice, but it's a grand event, big festivity. And, you know, so it mentions here how Santosh arranged for a beautiful canopy with banana trees in each of the corners and surrounding it in pots and golden water pots at the doorways. When you construct a mandap, particularly a yajnashala, and this would be the ultimate yajna of Kali Yuga, Sankirtan, there's four entrances. And those four entrances, you put gold water pots on each side and you install Jai and Vijay at each of these doors. So according to the direction, they have different names. And so you're very careful not to step over the dividers and the walls there, but you go in the entrance here, and then the whole thing is set up very nicely. So all of this was done. Each devotee that arrived for this kirtan was given garland and sandalwood paste. I've had this experience when I traveled on Padayatra many, many years ago. You'd come into some of the villages, and they'd be lined up at the edge of the village, and as the Padayatras would come, everybody get a garland, they put sandalwood paste on the forehead. Very, very nice. But even more to the point, when the kirtan was to begin, Narottam and Srinivas went to each of the instruments and offered arti, placed a garland on each of the mrdangas, put sandalwood paste with a flower petal, offered arti, offered a lamp, went to the next mudanga. All of the drums were respected in that way. And then the kartals, same thing. Worship was given to the kartals. Then after that was done, it was understood now the mood is proper and the kirtan can begin. Catch up with myself here. Ah, yes, yes. this is where Ramchandra comes. Okay, here. So the preparations have, you know, they're still going on. As many of us know, when Srila Prabhupada would sometimes come to visit a particular temple, there would be many occasions where as Prabhupada was walking in the front door, all the construction materials would be moved out the back door. There would be hope that he would go to the temple room and give a class while the paint would dry on the walls in his room. So this is the type of, You know, there was just so much constant activity going on. And Narottam was overseeing all of this up until the very day. You know, he would go down the pathway and he'd gaze at the temple being built over here and teams of laborers that had been working for months all finishing off all the last minute details. And of course, when you have a festival like this, you have to have a godown, and that godown has to be filled with all the different grains and vegetables and, you know, pots of ghee and all the different cooking arrangements that have to be there, and piles and piles and piles of spices and, you know, tamarind trees and all these different things. Everything has to be there. And so Narottam saw that all of the different, you know, godowns and all this was being set up very nicely. And, you know, the management of the whole thing was somewhat on the shoulders of Srinivasacharya and Narottam, but the real mover behind everything, as you mentioned, was Santosh. And, you know, Narottam and Srinivas just became so indebted to Santosh for his service in this way, for everything he was doing. And, you know, the deities were also, of course, finished at this time. And Narottam went into the quarters where the deities were kept and, you know, viewed the faces of the deities and the Murtiwalas, the artisans, had worked very, very seriously and very focusedly. And all five sets of the deities, all five deities were finished, but somehow Narottam was not very satisfied with the deity of Mahaprabhu. Just didn't, wasn't right there. And this wasn't the first time. They had tried and retried two or three times to change this deity, to just capture the beauty of Mahaprabhu. Narottam just wasn't happy. He just wasn't satisfied with the way it was going. So, you know, anyway, he was just, oh, Gauranga, what will we do? So he took rest that night. And in the evening, Lord Chaitanya appeared to him in a dream. He said, my dear Narottam, he said, you should listen to me very carefully. You're trying to carve a deity for me, but it will never turn out very nicely because I do not intend to manifest in that deity form. He said, there is already a metal deity of me in the grain house of one Brahmin named Vipradas. Because you are my very dear devotee, I'm blessing you with this knowledge. Now you may come and get me. And saying this, Lord Chaitanya disappeared. So the following morning, after finishing his morning ablutions and deities and seva and everything like that, you know, Narottam began to contemplate this. Okay, what will we do? How will we find? So he started asking around, you know, one devotee Vipradas somewhere has a grain house. You've heard of this Vipradas somewhere? Do you know this devotee Vipradas, some local village or something? So by inquiry like this, he came to find out that, oh yes, Vipradas, oh yeah, a couple of villages over, he's got very, very wealthy man, he's got many stockhouses of grains. Excuse me. And so Narottam arranged, okay, great, let's go, take me there, take me there. So, you know, the devotee showed up at Vipra's place and, you know, he was a little surprised, but I mean, he was quite delighted that, wow, the famous Narottam is here at my door, you know. So he welcomed him with great respect and quickly and hurriedly got a garland for him and then folded his hands and said, how can I be of some service to you? So Narottam said, I understand you have a large warehouse of grains. And Vipra kind of shuddered. He said, yes, yes, but we've closed that off many, many years ago. No one asked about this. It's a very unusual request. Why are you asking? He says, I want to go inside there. I have to retrieve something. He said, no, you don't understand. The reason we've closed this granary off is it's filled with horrible, poisonous vicious snakes. And anytime anyone even walks near the grain house, you hear them all hissing and, you know. I have so many other grain houses here, this one and this one. You take whatever you want from them. That's completely yours. You can have everything in them. Let me give that to you. No, that's the one I want to go in. No, but you don't understand. If you go in there, you will die. And if you die, the sinful reaction for the death of a sadhu by those snakes will fall on my head and my entire family will be ruined. Narottam simply laughed. He said, no, you don't understand. Nothing is going to happen. And besides, it's not the grains that I'm looking for. Oh, Mahasaya, please, this is not possible. Do not ask this of me. No one, not even I, dares even go near there. Narottam said, you don't have to worry. These snakes that you're describing, they're not going to bother me. Not going to be a problem. So Vipra fell to his knees and he folded his hands. He prayed, oh, please, don't go inside. It's so dangerous. I've even hired highly qualified snake charmers to come and try and get all the snakes out of there. And they weren't even successful. So I finally just sealed it up and nobody goes there. So, you know, please, I'm begging you, please don't go in there. Now, Narottam's associates that had come with him, they're a little swayed by this argument. Like, you know, Narottam, I mean, they're snakes. Shastra says, don't trust a politician or a snake. You know, and I mean, yes, we know you're a wonderful, exalted Vaishnava, but they're snakes. So, you know, maybe you shouldn't go in there. Thakur Mahasaya again just laughed. He said, don't worry. You'll all be very relieved and very happy with what I bring out of that storeroom. So he's not telling anybody what's there, you know. So Narottam went to the door and all the sounds of the snakes, and they're all, you can hear, they're all gathering inside. Narottam opens the door, and all the snakes scatter in all directions and leave. Narottam walks into the granary, and he looks around, and he sees, yes, big piles here, big piles there. Now, in the meantime, of course, Vipradas is simply, wow, it's just like, how did he do that? I couldn't get any of them out. And he just opens the door and chants and they all leave, you know. So then he goes into the grain house. And he begins searching through piles of grain. Looking here and there and moving this and that. And then he sees this little bit of shiny thing over in the distance. When I read this story, it reminded me of our own Tomal Krishna Maharaj's finding of his Damodar, little Radha Damodar deity that he found on Juhu Beach. Damodar was just poking out of the sand. He was with some devotees walking along the sand, and just a little bit of shiny silver there, and he noticed, oh, there's something, see what that is, and he dug up, and it was Damodar. So, at any rate, in this way, Narottam went over to where he saw this bit of metal shining, and he pulled it away. He pulled out the deity of Mahaprabhu. He was so happy. He embraced the deity to his chest. He was so satisfied. Brushed all the grains away, and he then emerged from the so-called dangerous grain house, which was now empty of all snakes, holding the golden deity of Mahaprabhu to his chest. All the devotees yelled out, all glories to Thakur Mahasaya, all glories to Thakur Mahasaya. And of course, Narottam said, all glories to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, very satisfied and fulfilled and happy, he carried the deity of Mahaprabhu back to the village of Katori with all the devotees on the sides chanting and dancing. And so finally, in this way, all the deities were completed. Six different deities were there. I'm trying to remember it. Sri Krishna Brajma. It's tattooed right across my chest. I can't read it. I don't know why my brain's freezing up and I can't remember the mantra. It glorifies the 60s. But that's later how that mantra comes. So we'll wait on that. I'll remember before then. So at any rate, sitting alone in front of the deities, Narottama is writing some songs, some new songs, and finishes his latest song with the final line, Kahe Dina Narottama Das. And he gathers up all of his notes and he immediately hurries off to the Kirtan Hall. Gokula Das is there and Devi Das. Devi Das is a disciple of this, very expert in Kirtan. And several of the other musicians are there, and Narottam sits down and I get this new song. It's just hot off the presses, you know. And Mridanga like this. Kartals like this. And boom. And he starts this, and, you know, and then, okay, now practice that. I'll be back tomorrow. So he gives him this new kirtan like this, you know. And so, you know, he'd been doing these different songs for weeks leading up to the festival. He wanted everything to just be, you know, really, really wonderful and amazing, and training all the kirtan singers and all like this, you know. So anyway, we get to the actual festival is now beginning. And it describes, as we've already said, how all the devotees arrived. But then a special boat came across the Ganga. Beautiful boat, a beautiful palanquin with nice cloth draped over that palanquin on the boat. And this was the boat of Janavamata. And on the banks there, on the Kateri side of the Padmavati River, was Srinivas, Shamananda, Narottam, and Ramchandra Kaviraj. They were all there. Of course, all the residents of Kateri were there too. And they were all there waiting. Narottam would look, oh, she must be on that boat, you know. So Santosh had this boat built special for her and kept over on that side so that when she arrived, when Janavamata left her village, she originally started to walk with the devotees. She got a short distance and the devotees insisted, no, we've made this palanquin, you must go in the palanquin. You're you know, the wife of Nityananda. You're the head of the Sampradaya Charini, wouldn't it be? The Sampradaya Charya. And so you have to go in the palanquin. So she relented and accepted their service and was carried in the palanquin too. So, you know, they're looking over and they see, oh, look, there's some of her disciples. There's Manikatam Ramdas and there's Marori Chaitanya. Oh, that looks like Vrindavan Das as well. It must be, Janavamata must be right behind them, you know. And wait, isn't that Hridoy Chaitanya from Ambika Kalna? And Sri Nidhi from Navadvip? Oh, she must be with that group of devotees. So, you know, excitement and anticipation is just building and building. And so finally, the boat with Janavamata and her entire entourage comes near the shore. And as it gets to the edge of the bank, to the banks of the land, all the devotees, they rush down. And very excitedly, they want to be the first one to see, and they're offering obeisances and looking through the crowd. And, you know, the devotees are wading into the water to put garlands and sandalwood paste on all the different Vaishnavas that have come. And then they were scooping up the water because the devotees have just walked in it and putting it on your head and throw some over at you. And they began throwing a bit of water back and forth. And, you know, then taking that water and bathing the feet of the guests, and then taking that mud and putting it on their heads. And so a very worshipful and playful mood develops on the banks of the river there. And then, of course, devotees come and they begin to unload all the valuable gifts that Janavamata has brought to the deities. And Janavamata doesn't come empty-handed. Who goes to a party empty-handed? You know, you at least have to bring something to drink or something to eat. So Janavamata has gone way beyond that. She's brought all types of valuable gifts to be used for the deities here. So Narottam, Srinivas, and Shamananda, suddenly they catch sight of Janavamata as she steps down from the palanquin onto the banks of the Padmavati River, and they immediately fall to the ground flat, offering full dandavats to her. And she smiles very brightly at each of them, so happy to see them again. And, you know, she's followed by her own son, Virabhadra. He's come also. Narottam approaches. He says, Kateri has now become blessed by your association. you have arrived, now we can begin the ceremony. You know, we were worried that maybe you wouldn't come, but now that you're here, we know everything will be a grand success. Janavamata said, we wouldn't have missed this. This is the most wonderful festival. It is Mahaprabhu's desire that all of us come together in glorification of him. So the devotees all stepped aside and made a pass so she could walk into the town. So in this way, all the, you know, we've already described all the decorations in the town and how beautiful everything was and how Narottam arranged for, you know, all the different devotees to have their residences and, you know, last minute things. There's a group of men here grinding sandalwood paste, you know, because, I mean, you're worshiping the Mrigangas and the cartels and all the devotees. I mean, that's a lot of sandalwood paste. And, you know, when we do an Abhishek here for festival days, you get somebody in there and they grind sandalwood paste for 20 minutes and go, okay, is that good? What do you mean, is that good? That's like a third of what I need. Keep going, you know. And when we do Chandan Yatra, it's like for a month in advance, we're grinding sandalwood paste, and we just hope that there'll be enough to cover the whole deities, you know. So there's a whole group of men vigorously with these big stones rubbing and making all the sandalwood paste like this, and, you know, they all see all the devotees go by and offer all their respects, and this fragrance of Chandan, you know, floats into the areas everyone's going through, and Narottam walks a little further, and, you know, he's looking at the exquisite, you know, carving of the marble pillars in the temple and how just wonderful everything is. And he sees it over there, the kitchens, and the fires are already started there. And, you know, everything's coming very, you know, wonderfully together. And the cooks are organizing everything, big wooden paddles and large pots and, you know, walks for, and there's a whole other crew over here busy cutting up all the vegetables and cleaning the dal off here, and someone kneading doughs to make puris and, you know, samosas and all the other things like that. And the entire town, every man, woman, and child in Khetri is engaged in something for this festival. And under the expert direction of Srinivas and Narottam and the facility of Santosh, everything goes on without a hitch. That's a manager's dream. That's a manager's dream. Huge, gigantic festival with more people than you can ever count, and everything just goes along smoothly. So, at any rate, the devotees are all given to their different quarters like this, and, you know, they all gather in the evening, and the kirtan I just described, you know, begins, and, you know, everyone comes. Everyone comes. There's no restrictions. The kirtans during Mahaprabhu's time at the home of Srivas, these were private kirtans, Srivas Angam. These were, you know, midnight kirtans that only selected few were brought for. There's actually one time it describes that during those kirtans, Mahaprabhu started, the kirtan went on, and hold the kirtan, man. I'm not feeling the ecstasy tonight. No? Let's start again. The kirtan starts again. They're going like this. Vachitani stops. No. Not feeling the ecstasy. Is there someone impure in the room? No, it's just the usual group here. Srivas doesn't answer that question. So the third time, they start up and Vachitani stops. No. Someone is in the room that is not qualified. Turns out that Srivas's mother-in-law, I think, is hiding under a basket in the corner because she's heard about these incredible kids. She wants to see them. She says, no, I'm sorry. Out. So these kirtans, they were very private kirtans. This was the beginning of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, and the high level of devotion and rasa and ecstasy going on was very private. But the kirtan's going on here at Khetri. Every child, every woman, every man, every old person, every laborer, every Brahmin, everybody was all there and welcome and given full facility. And by the well into the evening, the entire town of Khetri was completely overflowing with this amazing excitement from this kirtan. And so the next morning comes, and people are cramming into the courtyard very early. You know, it's just like for on Janmashtami, you know, Mangalarti, you can barely fit all the devotees in this temple room. Now, Tuesday morning in the middle of January, maybe not so much. But Janmashtami morning, so many devotees. So in the same way here, it mentions that the devotees were there. There was a beautiful, massive canopy in front of where the deity's altar was, draped with all types of colorful cloth and pirouetted into the middle of the room from all the corners, and then additional cloths coming like that with decorations hanging at each of the, just really, really wonderful flower garlands and mango decorations with flowers hanging in between them, and coconuts and banana trees and gold pots with scented water, and sitting on top of piles of rice and different types of grains, and everything was just very, very nice. And then in the middle of all this was a large nanvedi, large pedestal that had been built for the deities to be on so that they would be installed there. And in front of where they were was a beautiful, very, very elaborately detailed and patterned silk cloth that was in front of the deities, So very, very nice. The whole Yajnashala was just wonderful. And then, of course, over here were the sacred fires for the different installation of the mantras and pots of ghee. Sometimes we do a kunda here for 108 names of this one and that one. It's like, okay, how much ghee do you need? Well, we'll take 2 gallons of ghee. There's like, oh, 2 gallons of ghee. Oh, that's so much. Here they had pots and pots of ghee and Brahmins just the fires and like this. So, and sitting alongside all of this, Narottam and Ramchandra and Srinivas, they're discussing all these final arrangements. They're here for this major day. And when he concludes everything's completely ready, he goes and personally escorts Janabhamata to the festival site. And then Narottam returns, and he and Ramchandra then escort each of the exalted senior guests into all their appropriate seats. Standing in front of the assembly of all these august Vaishnavas, Srinivas addresses them all and glorifies them and appreciates their travel and speaks nice words about each of them, and then at the end requests that they all give their permission that we can now begin the Abhishek ceremony for the deities. And all the senior devotees nod their heads in consent, and a roar of approval comes out from all the rest of the devotees everywhere. So then Srinivas takes the cloth covering the deities and pulls it down and reveals these amazing forms. Sri Krishna Braj Mohana. I have this written down. I should have brought it. So when the cloth was taken down, the devotees like, now, of course, the pran pratishtha hasn't taken place. The deities are still covered, their eyes, but just the beautiful forms, it's just so amazing. And, Srinivas organized everything. Several Brahmins were there with all the different golden pots filled with all different types of substances, the 5 basic substances for the Panchamrita, and then the Panchagavya, and then all the different fruit juices, and all the different scented waters, and all the different jeweled waters, and all the different all these different things, and this is all going on. And while this is happening, conch shells are blowing, gongs are being banged, bells are ringing, the ladies are doing that little thing, Side note, men are not allowed to do that. Shortens a man's lifespan if he does that. It's only for the ladies. So, and then of course, in each of the 4 corners, the Brahmins are chanting their particular mantras. Brahma Samhita is chanted in one corner, and all the different mantras are being chanted, and Narottam's just standing there looking at this golden deity of Lord Chaitanya, just completely transfixed, and his heart's just filled with love as he realizes the service he's performed for the devotees and for Lord Chaitanya by being the one to bring this, clouds and clouds and clouds of fragrant frankincense and sandalwood smoke fill the air, and sent throughout the whole courtyard, and the waters poured over the bodies of the devotees, and devotees all cry out in great jubilation, and when the bathing is completed, all the various substances have been offered to the Lord. Everything has been finished. The deity is then covered up from sight and taken to the altar, and Srinivas himself dresses each single deity. Beautiful clothing, beautiful outfits that have been made. All the best seamstresses of the area have made these outfits, and of course, valuable jewels that Janavamata has brought and are placed on the deities. And you can just imagine how elaborate the turbans were, you know. Arunati Priya, her turbans on Sunday and Wednesday have become three-dimensional. You look at these turbans and it's like, how many layers are there? So in the same way, we can just imagine Srinivasacharya himself stressing these deities for the first time. So everything goes on, and of course, while this is going on is when the Agnihotra is performed, while the deities are being dressed. All the devotees are throwing their grains into the fire, and everyone's giving their approval for, you know, the culmination of this ceremony. So Srinivas completes the dressing, completes the final steps for the worship of the deities, puts sandalwood on the paste of each of them, decorates them with flowers, and then at the appropriate time, an army of conch shells blows. And as these conch shells blow, all the devotees' attention is transfixed to the altar. And then curtains open, revealing the deities bedecked in their new outfits in beautiful gold. And the crowd just wild in ecstasy and began pushing forward to get darshan. And, you know, I mean, this isn't only like, okay, Arjanmastami or Radhastami, everybody wants to see the new outfit. This is the very first time these deities have been seen. And every devotee from anywhere has been invited for this. So, and I should note that these aren't like very big, huge deities. These are smaller deities. And Srinivasacharya picks up the deities one by one. Jai Sri Sri Balabhakanta ki jai! Jai Sri Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai! Jai Sri Sri Braj Mohan ki jai! Jai Sri Sri Krishna ki jai, Jai Sri Sri Radha Kanta ki jai, Jai Sri Sri Radha Raman ki jai. And all the devotees are just so ecstatic. Sri Krishna Braj Mohan, Sri Krishna Braj Mohan, Gauranga. I'm embarrassed that I can't remember that mantra. At any rate, so then the kirtan, just this wild, rip-roaring kirtan, not a sit-down bhajan that Narottam's arranging for later, but just a glorious kirtan goes on, and the devotees are just so ecstatic, and, you know, this continues on and continues on and continues on. The curtains are then closed, and a feast is offered to the deities. After the feast is offered, the kirtan continues, and the arti takes place. So when the arti is finished, then Srinivas turns to Narottam, the kirtan has stopped, and he says, now let your kirtan begin. So Narottam's heart just fills with the great joy of anticipation because he's been waiting for this moment. And, you know, the, let's catch up on both sides here. Narottam sits down and he's surrounded by all of his different key musicians. Gauranga's on one side and Gokul, Devadas, and Balaba's there. And it's described that it was like the moon seated with the luminary stars surrounding him. So in this way, the kirtan begins. And these songs are written by Narottam to bring about the deep emotion of remembering Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Acharya, and the devotees that are performing these are engaging in this kirtan in that exact mood. everyone becomes so just satisfied, completely satisfied to hear this kirtan. And the emotions of the kirtan would range according to the tempo of a particular song and what the mood was, you know, a song about Vrindavan or a song about Mahaprabhu's pastimes in Navadvip. And so, you know, in this way, as they're going, Narottam suddenly changes up the style. And as he changes it, he acknowledges to the kirtan players that he acknowledges this new tune, this new style of kirtan that he's been practicing with them. And this brings about a particularly sweet remembrance of Lord Chaitanya. And the singers, they all become very, very emotional as they hear this. And this envelops a great mood of ecstasy amongst all the devotees participating and listening to the kirtan. And Janava Mata Ishwari herself begins to cry out in ecstasy as she listens to the song describing the beautiful glories of Sri Gaurachandra. And it mentions that Achyutananda, Advaitacharya's son, and Sripati Srinidhi, the two brothers, that they just completely lost control of their emotions and began shivering and crying in ecstasy. People discussed for days after the kirtan recital of Narottam, and even during the time, there was different opinions. One person appreciated that kirtan, that Narottam presented a different mood with each song, and another person appreciated how the overall presentation of everything, the organization of the instruments and the tunes and the particular melodies to complement the theme of the song was so nicely arranged. And then someone else said that, Narottam was attempting to duplicate the mood of kirtan when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was there. And then someone else would agree that, certainly Lord Chaitanya must be enjoying hearing these kirtans. You know, and someone else would express it was their inner desire to see the Lord and his associates manifest themselves during these kirtans, you know. And so all the different devotees that were taking place in this festival had so many different opinions about the kirtan and the various melodies. And, you know, certainly the Gandharvas have come down and have manifested themselves taking part in this kirtan. It actually mentions that during this kirtan recital, the demigods began to shower flowers. Narada Muni and other great sages came in disguise to attend the kirtan of Narottam Das Thakur at the festival of Keturi. It says even the animals, the birds, and even snakes began mesmerized by the songs of Narottam during the kirtan. It says as the ocean of Sankirtan, little by little, began to overflow its banks, the pavilion of the Sankirtan, all the people there forgot their individual existence and bathed each other in their tears of ecstasy. So, in this way, while listening to the Sankirtan festival being performed in Keturi and directed by Narottam Das Thakur, it mentions that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided, I'm going there. So, in that pavilion, during that installation of the deities of Keturi, during that first Gaur Purnima, in the kirtan directed by Narottam Das Thakur, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, Advaitacharya, and so many other associates all manifested just like lightning in a cloud right there in the midst of the kirtan. They began dancing, and the jewels on their ankles and their arms began to glitter in the sun as they danced back and forth to the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. It mentions that even Lord Brahma and the other demigods were just amazed and could not understand how it was that this kirtan of Narottam had caused Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to appear. So much so that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his dancing showered love of God on anybody that was near them. And Nityananda's dancing, it caused the entire earth to tremble. And Advaita's dancing was perceived to be like that of a mad lion. And he roared in ecstasy at different points in the kirtan. Gadadhar Pandit, he danced very, very joyfully. And by his side was Srinivas, Yeah, by his side was Srinivasacharya. He was dancing with Srinivasacharya. And Srivas Pandit was there, Murari Gupta, Vakreshwar Pandit, Haridas Thakur, Sarup Damodar, Gadadhar Das, Ramananda Roy, Vasudev Dat, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. These are all people that had passed away many years before, but they had all come with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take part in this kirtan at this festival of Khetri. It mentions that Achyutananda himself was flowing with tears of ecstasy as he danced standing next to his father, Advaita Acharya. Mukunda, Narhari, Raghunandana, the names just go on and on and on, listing all these hundreds of associates of Mahaprabhu that appeared with him at this kirtan festival. I mean, literally, there's 4, 5, 6 paragraphs given of all the different associates. It mentions the Gandharvas themselves came down to dance, figuring if Lord Chaitanya has come, we should go too. So they came and also danced. And Lord Chaitanya had such love for his devotees, for this service they were doing, that he wanted to fulfill the desires of Srinivas and Narottama, and this is why he appeared in the middle of this kirtan festival. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he walked over to Srinivasacharya and embraced him. And he went over to Narottam Das Thakur and motioned that he should rise, because Narottam was in the middle of directing, and he embraced him. And the amazing thing was, this was not something that just 3 or 4 advanced devotees could see. Everyone who was there could perceive it. Even if I would have been there, I could have seen it. As rascal as I am, everybody that was in attendance there was able to see that the Lord had appeared there. So the kirtan continued this way and came to a certain crescendo. And as it reached that crescendo, Mahaprabhu and all of his associates immediately disappeared. It describes that the lamentation and pitiful feelings of separation experienced by the devotees at that kirtan once the Lord left just broke everyone's hearts. No one could believe that the Lord had been there and then all of a sudden he wasn't there. And the feelings of ecstasy for all the devotees, it brought about both a feeling of ecstasy and despair. Devotees would cry out different things, you know, different comments. One person would cry out for Lord Chaitanya to please come back, and another would go looking behind the different pots and see if Advaita Acharya was hiding there somewhere, and someone else would look and say, did you see Haridas? Where's Vakreshwar Pandit? And, you know, one person would call out for Srinivas, and for Srivas and for Murari Gupta. And so in this way, everyone was thinking, no, we just have to get this to continue for just a little bit longer. So in this way, the entire kirtan hall was thrown into utter confusion. Narottam could appreciate the confusion that was going on, for, I mean, indeed, he was a part of it. He was feeling that separation too. But nonetheless, he realized that the festival had to continue. So Srinivas Acharya was called by Janava Mata, who had gathered her senses. I mean, imagine Janava Mata had witnessed her husband Nityananda being there. She had not seen him in so long. So she was one of the first to collect herself, and she called for Srinivasacharya. And she said, now begin the festival of Holi. So following Janava Mata's request, Srinivas hurried off to the Pujari quarters and began to arrange everything for this next part of the festival. And they brought into the deity area many large containers filled with all different types of colored dyes made from different types of colored flower pollens. And they began to mix them with different types of scented perfumes. And then they took those containers and placed them on the altar in front of the deities. They invited Mother Janava Mata up, and she took some of these powders and very gracefully placed them at the feet of each of the deities. Then the kirtan started again. Narottam encouraged the devotees to begin the kirtan again. And as the kirtan began, the devotees watched as the Brahmins, the pujaris, began to rub these different scented colors on the form of the deities. And as they showered the deities with these different colors, a whole festive mood spread throughout the temple courtyard, and the pots of colored dyes made their way to the front of the altar, and people began to take handfuls and throw them very playfully at each other, and this spilled out into the streets surrounding the temple, and there were dyes being thrown everywhere, and beautiful songs glorifying the pastimes of Radha and Krishna being sung by the kirtaniers, and this went on all throughout the night. Finally, twilight came. Thousands of excited devotees crammed themselves into the temple room for the big Abhishek of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for this first Gaur Purnima festival. Here again, the Abhishek was conducted with all the proper substances, Panchamrita, Panchagavya, all the scented waters and herbal waters, different types of fruit juices and all. This was all conducted by Srinivasacharya. The four directions resounded with the chanting of Vedic hymns and mantras and the kirtan. Excuse me. When all the proper offerings had been completed, the deity was redressed, arti was offered, and then the final doors were closed and the deities were put to rest for the night. But the devotees weren't going anywhere. The devotees were like, okay, well, we're not going to sleep. This is just too much fun. Who needs to sleep? So they just continued on. And as the golden moon rose overhead and the entire town of Khetri became just effulgent with the rays of this moon and the imminence of the sound of kirtan, the devotees just continued late into the night. None of them went anywhere. Hundreds and hundreds of devotees stayed and chanted and danced all throughout the night. Other devotees wandered throughout the village with hundreds of lamps, putting them in all the different crossroads and corners and doorways so that everyone could see everything very nicely. And then some places people sat down and watched performances of different dramas. And in other places people sat down to hear devotees speak about the pastimes of the Lord. And in this way, all throughout the entire night, the activities went on. So when the sun was ready to rise the next morning, the devotees went for the Mangalarti, first Mangalarti of these new deities. And then after the Mangalarti was finished, the various devotees returned to their residences to take their morning shower, perform their japa, you know, take their bath at the Padmavati River, I should say, and then worship their separate deities like that. In the meantime, of course, those who organize these things, there's never any downtime. Not until it's all finished. Hundreds of fires were being stoked in the kitchen under the direction of Janavamata and her expert band of cooks. She had different people engaged in different types of tasks, and things had been going on in preparation for this in great detail. You know, all the this type of vegetables being cut in this manner, that spice is being mixed with this chaunce in that way, and this vegetable is being cut in an entirely different manner. This dough is being made for this preparation to be added to it. All of this is going on under the expert direction of Mother Janavamata. Now we have our acharyas in our kitchen here. We have our ruchiras, and we have our kutis, and we have our kripa sindhus, and soma, you know, Varuna, and I mean, I could just go on. The list is so long of all these expert cooks here. And we've all tasted endless feasts that they've prepared for us over the last decade. Imagine, though, the best of those feasts doesn't even hold a candle to the cooking of Mother Janavamata. And even if she was not directly cooking it, her power and potency was imbibed in every single person that assisted her, so that the entire mood of the whole kitchen was just one of everything flowing effortlessly. Now that's a well-organized kitchen. That means there even had to be pot washers. So in this way, most wonderful of feasts was made. The devotees swarmed again to the temple, and you know the kirtan went on, and the feast was offered to the deities. The kirtan continued to the Rajbhog offering, and finally Srinivas had to actually go in and interrupt the kirtan. Okay, we need to stop the kirtan now so we can distribute prasadam. So, you know, sometimes we do that in a festival and everybody looks at you, but Srinivas didn't. He had to stop the kirtan so the prasadam could be distributed. So as the chanting came to a close, Srinivas himself with a crew of men swept the courtyard clean and then washed everything down. Everything was dried and the seats were set out for all the senior Vaishnavas. All the devotees were given their seats. Everyone was seated nicely. Narottam and his band of helpers distributed the prasadam. And there's a very key way. I'm often reminded in these types of descriptions that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very expert at distributing prasadam like this. When I was serving with him in Dallas and in Houston, you know, the banana leaf plates would go around. We actually arranged somehow or another we had banana leaf plates. I don't know how the banana trees in the local residences ever grew back, but we had banana leaf plates. And first would go around the salt, then would go limes, then after that chilies, then the rice would go, and then the dal would go, and all of this, and there's an exact science as to what's served out in what order. And Narottam arranged all this. You know, servers came and put the leaf plates down in front of all the different devotees, and it looked like endless lines as far as you could see. When I was in Jaipur this past Kartik with Indradyumna Swami, we were there with 300 devotees, and the host that was receiving us in Jaipur was a very large business and quite a large hall, and he had plates lined up for 300 devotees, leaf plates and cups, as far as I could see, literally as far as I could see. I got down on the ground and took a picture at that level, and it's just like there was no end to the plates and cups, you know. So the same way here, it was like endless lines of devotees stretched as far as the courtyard and out into the surrounding areas. So pleased to see this, Janavamata encouraged all the helpers to serve as quickly as they can. Huge quantities of yogurt and flat rice and bananas and varieties of sweets. And then, of course, hundreds and hundreds of pots of Panchamrita. They were carried down the line and distributed to all the jubilant devotees. Oh, Panchamrita! Everybody was very happy. And Mother Janavamata just stood back and watched in great joy, enjoying and relishing that everyone was there. And careful, oh, you didn't get chapati, so this one. Yeah. Subji over here. And she was directing each server, you know, noting who needed what. She was so attentive and loving, just like a mother. So she watched it. Everybody was very satisfied. And all throughout the prasadam, you hear, Jai Gurunga! Hri, Hri, Ha, Hri, Ha! All these different cries would go up. The plates were piled high with prasadam. There was no shortage. Oh, I came a little late. There's none of that subji with the curd in it. No, there's buckets more. Don't worry about it. So the aroma and the flavors of all the different prasadam mixing together, and each preparation was just so succulent and tasty and spiced just so perfect. I mean, it was cooked by Mother Janavamata. It seemed like a seemingly endless supply of fried vegetables and rice and soups and condensed milk with little cakes inside of it, and it was just served out until no one could eat another bite. There's a phrase, ek kanta, up to the neck. Devotees were filled up to the ears. So Srinivas and Narottam then went to Janavamata. My dear Janavamata, you've worked so hard today. Please, now you sit down and take prasadam. Janavamata was having none of it. No. You two have organized the festival. It is my desire that I serve you, Prashadam. Please sit down. This is the Sampradaya Acharya, Vaishnavi Janava Devi, who is the topmost of devotees, and she's serving Prashadam to everyone else, seeing that they're all satisfied. For my sake, she says, please, you sit and eat with all the other servers. What are you going to do at that point? You know, you requested in that way. So Srinivas and Narottam very humbly and very quietly, they went with their handful of associates and servers and sat down. And Mother Janamamata personally came and distributed prasadam, coaxing each one. No, just a little more, please. Don't I hear you talking like that? You know, Narottam and Srinivas, they just spent the entire meal praising the culinary expertise of Janamamata. All the spicing and just everyone ate just more than they could even imagine they could possibly eat. And then festivities continued after the feast. So for 3 days, festivities of this nature went on in Khetri. The holy name was chanted. Discourses from the Bhagavat were discussed. Bhajans were engaged in. Classical dances and dramatic performances were enacted. And finally, on the last day, when everything came to a close and all the guests began to depart from Khetri, great sadness and tears filled the eyes of all the residents. But it was only made bearable by one thing, the devotees promising that the following year they would meet again and do it all over. Narottam Das Thakur ki. Hare Krishna.